Well, hello everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, and very glad to be with you, as I always am, and I know I say that, but just deal with it. Okay, so here we are. Later on in the show, we have one of our counselors, Roberta, in the studio to talk about or address a question on an abusive relationship with a guy who says he wants to change. Is he really going to change? So Roberta's going to weigh in on that. And then for our culture segment, we have the fabulous Kelly Minter on the phone with us to talk about her latest book, Wherever the River Runs, which is a story of kind of a story slash application spiritual memoir of her time on the Amazon in Brazil, multiple trips that she made there and what God taught her about what he's doing around the world as a result. Again, that's Wherever the River Runs with Kelly Minter. We love her. And I want you to be aware of the fact that this week's show sponsor, we love it when people sponsor our show, is Zondervan. And actually, they want you to study the Bible through the eyes of a first century disciple with their NIV First Century Study Bible. New from Zondervan. Learn more at zondervan.com for that. Here we are for our round table. We have three fresh faces in the studio, people that have never been on the show. We occasionally can rope new people into being on the show until they realize what it's all about, and then they never talk to us again. No, I'm just teasing. But here we are. We have Chelsea, Carla, and Rob. Hi, guys. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yay,
good to be
great
here.
Great to have you. And in light of our culture segment, like I said, where we're talking to Kelly about her experience on the Amazon and in the surrounding villages, we're going to talk a little bit about cross-cultural experiences and or short-term mission trips and how God uses them in the lives of especially single young adults. This is a time when we have the luxury of being able to do these types of trips. And it's kind of like, is it a way to maximize our time? Is it good? Is it something that's scary for us to step out? I mean, some of us, like, there are people that just haven't even gone outside their city, like, until they're in college, and then they go off to college, and they're like, oh, there are other, like, states in the U.S. or other places around the world. So here we have the opportunity to really go cross-culturally, and so I appreciate you guys being willing to share your own experiences. So let's go ahead and jump in and talk about, when was the first time that you even had the thought that you might be willing to do a trip of this nature? Okay, so other than, you know, when you're 4 years old and you'll just go anywhere that anyone takes you. But I mean, when it finally gets to the point where you're an adult, you make this decision, this is something that, you know, you're giving up some kind of time where you could be doing other things. You obviously probably had to raise some support in order to go over there or do whatever. Let's talk a little bit about those first thoughts of, this might be something that I want to throw my weight behind and actually make a priority to do.
I went on my first missions trip when I was, oh my goodness, like 8 years old with my family to Juarez, Mexico. And I loved it. But I kind of made my first decision to go on a trip with the trips that focus on the family used to lead with Brio, Never the Same Missions Trips. And decided to do that and went to Ecuador in the summer of 2011. And I just fell in love with it. And I couldn't get enough. And I've been on two trips since. But I just loved the culture and the people. And it really taught me a lot about growing in my own faith, and then also being able to pour into the lives of the high school students who go on the trip. And just seeing how God is at work in their lives. But I learned so much too. So I've been to Panama since then. And then also I've been to Costa Rica just this past summer.
Wow. So obviously, I mean, really what you shared, your family and their prioritization of it is really what kind of what got you started and saying this is important for us to do.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I think the very first mission trip was in high school to Peru, and I don't remember what the decision-making process looked like, but it was just the cool thing that everybody was doing in youth group. It was just kind of what was expected of a Christian
peer pressure in a
teenager.
Positive sense, I guess.
Yeah. And I mean, it was exciting. I don't normally consider it my first mission trip just because I was a dramatic teenager and was so focused on the drama and not so much what I was there to do. But I went on a few domestic trips to Seattle with a college ministry in college. And I think that was the first time where I realized, oh, I'm quote-unquote sacrificing my spring break to go on a mission trip. And But I mean, it was a fun time, and you got to raise support for it. And I think sometimes our motives on mission trips are, well, I get to travel and I get to raise support for it. I don't have to pay for it. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. So I think, and then I went on a mission trip after college to the Philippines, and that one was the one where it really changed my perspective on a lot of things and kind of cast a vision for what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. So I think different experiences with mission trips have kind of helped me see, I don't know, it's not just a fun thing you do, but, mm-hmm. You know, you're actually giving up time to do something and you're mm-hmm. raising support for it.
Mm-hmm. I think for me, I would consider my first kind of as a young adult making my own decision about going on a trip was the summer after I graduated college. And I went to Southeast Asia for a couple weeks. And I think I went, at that point in my life, I was really just hungry to serve God. And I wanted to know, what is this thing like to be a, quote, missionary? And I had an opportunity to go. And it was a wonderful experience. I ended up going, actually, the next three summers, so four summers in a row on short-term trips. And that first trip opened the door for what I'd be doing the next 7 years, which was working as a missionary to college students in the States. Hmm. So kind of going overseas was the intro to really a big part of my life, actually.
Mm-hmm. Now, had any of you guys grown up, like, did you have a picture in your head of what missions was? Like, you'd heard missionary stories, or, you know, you thought you were going to be out with, like, headhunters, so you're like, well, I'm not going to choose that place. Or, I mean, how did what your expectations were going into this kind of meet with reality with what you ended up actually doing?
I think it was a lot. I imagined it being a lot harder than it was, like, that I was going to, like, be bitten by mosquitoes all the time mm-hmm. and, like, be deathly ill and all this dramatic stuff. But it was hard. It was not an easy thing. I really had to learn how to go outside of myself and seeking the Lord for energy just to get up in the morning when you've been up till 11 o'clock at night and then you have to wake up at 5 and or whatever and just keep going. But I think it wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be in some areas. But I think it challenged me a lot more in my faith than I thought it was going to be, and really gave me a new perspective on what a lot of people in the world live like and how blessed we are here in the States with what we have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, I didn't have a ton of expectations, but I was surprised looking back at the way that God kind of moved and used us. And it required a patience that I wasn't used to. I think I had an idea of going and being this loud voice or this, I don't know, just this, you know, you picture yourself in these epic situations. mm-hmm. But the reality was the context of what we were doing, it was very relational. It wasn't always very obvious, but it was powerful. And I had to learn it took me a little while looking back to see some of the powerful ways that God did move, but it just wasn't necessarily in some of the ways that I was expecting, I mm-hmm. guess. Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I always have the expectation that, you'll be serving all the time. There's no waiting period. And I know with the last trip I went on, it was just the process of figuring out which ministry you'd be serving in, because we didn't know which ministries there would be until we got there. And for me and my teammate, it took like 2 weeks before we were actually placed anywhere. And so, I don't know, sometimes some mission trips, there's a waiting period and God's just kind of working in your heart and more so than you're serving other people, which, I mean, is a big part of it too, but it's a cliche that, you know, you'll be learning more as well and you'll be blessed on a mission trip sometimes more than what you can see how you're blessing other people. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, that's interesting because I... my primary mission trip experience was actually when I was in college, finishing up college, and I did my internship down in Paraguay. And so I was down there for 3 months and lived with a Paraguayan family. And it was weird because I you know, you associate South America with poverty and mm-hmm. with a lot of that. But I actually lived with the wealthiest family in the country. Mm-hmm. And so wow. it was a weird experience. Talk about yeah. like yeah. showing yeah. your pictures to people who supported yeah. you going down there. That was a little awkward.
yeah.
Because I was like with these like multiple pools and waterfalls yeah. like in between them. And but recognizing that, you know what, rich people need Jesus too. And mm-hmm. it was a very dark actually place with a family that I was with. Mm-hmm. So how would you guys say, you know, to those folks, and of course we're talking primarily to single young adults here, who are kind of weighing that balance of, okay, there's a lot I need to do in my life. I'm finishing school, or I'm trying to get a graduate degree. Mm. I don't have any money. I need to work a summer job because I have to save money, all this craziness. Mm-hmm. How can you justify taking this kind of time and in fact raising support and choosing to do this? What did you find were the things you had to give up, and what were the benefits you got in return?
I think I gave up a lot of, this past summer when I went, I gave up some future job opportunities that I could have had and time making money, but I just really was so blessed by how the Lord provided enough support for me to be able to go. And I just continued to trust him with it and ask him to pave the way for me to go. And I had enough support down to where I was going shopping at Walmart, getting things ready for my trip that I didn't have to pay for anything. And that was just very overwhelming to me, and I was felt so provided for and blessed by that. But I think it is a sacrifice that you have to make, but the things that I've learned on the trips that I've gone on have totally changed my perspective on the world and changed my life. And I've built some amazing relationships with people who have become like my family. And so I think I gave up a lot of things that the world says is important, like having security in a job and financially, but I know that that's not what's most important in this life, because we know that we have something else that we're looking forward to. And to be able to say that that God used me to play a role in his kingdom in a different country is huge to me.
Mm-hmm. And I think the reality for most young people, most single young people, is that you're never going to be freer than you are now. Mm-hmm. So you mm-hmm. feel like you have, you know, a ton of things you need to do. You feel like, you know, wow, this is, I don't have time for this. But the truth is, you probably have more time now than you ever will in the rest of mm-hmm. your life. And it doesn't mean that you can't do this later on. But there are some practical things about life. When my friends, you know, started having children and starting careers, that changes things. And so I think that as a young adult, you have an opportunity to really, yeah, you're going to have to make some sacrifices, but it's such a perfect time to do mm-hmm. this. Mm-hmm. That's kind of my perspective. Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yeah, and I think for me, in some ways, it didn't feel like a sacrifice, because the last trip I went on, or I guess second to last trip, right after college, I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I knew that having an experience like that could help shape what I wanted to do in the future, and it did. And so I think, yeah, I mean, you're single, you're not tied to anything, you're not responsible for anyone per se. And so I just think it's a perfect time to get out there and just see, just to be available to God and how he could work in your life overseas and just change your perspective mm-hmm. on a lot of things. And for me, it was just a learning experience and becoming aware of different issues. And so when I returned, I was able to take some action steps to put the things that I'd learned and the things that I'd seen to practice. Mm-hmm. And
so, Carla, how did you learn mm-hmm. on missions trips about what you wanted to do in the future?
Yeah, so the trip to the Philippines, I had the opportunity to work with prostitution survivors. And, you know, human trafficking is such a buzzword now, but I didn't understand that term when I was there. I just knew prostitution survivors, and I knew it had some tie to poverty. So I was able to learn and work closely to these girls and learn from the directors and get to see what fair trade meant as these women were making greeting cards. And when I returned to Colorado, I actually walked into a fair trade store and saw the exact greeting cards that these women had made mm-hmm. with their name signed on the back. Like mm-hmm. I recognized the designs, I'd worked on them. And and that kind of clicked for me. And so I started doing research, like figuring out what are some fair trade stores here? What are some organizations working with sex trafficking victims in Colorado? And then I got an internship being able to blog, research and blog about those kind of issues. And and then now becoming a mentor for a girl who was rescued from sex trafficking here in Colorado. So while I have a job right now that doesn't have anything to do with that, I'm able to explore those things that I'm passionate about and see where that'll take me later on. So I think that experience in the Philippines was able to kind of cast a vision for that.
Yeah, that's good. Any other experiences you guys have to share as far as like things that you went in maybe not expecting and came out either having learned or finding ways that you discovered maybe some giftedness in something you didn't know about or a passion for something?
I think I did. I had worked with youth before and had a youth internship at my church in between my high school and college years. And so I was passionate about working with youth and being able to kind of watch God work in their lives. But on the trips that I've been on with Never the Same Missions and Big World Ventures, I've been able to mentor hundreds of high school students who come from all over the United States. And then as college students and adult leaders, we're able to work with them and just watch God work in their lives while they're ministering to other people. And I think that was huge for me. And just being able to see God working in so many people's lives in different areas. And so I'm really passionate about just doing ministry with people, I think, in general. And I've become more of an extrovert as a result of those trips. And I just love hearing people's stories. And I've also been given some really good leadership opportunities. I was told I was a good leader in high school. And I was like, psh, leaders have to stand up and talk in front of people. I hate doing that. I don't want to do that. And people on the mission trip really saw the potential in me to be a good leader. And I was able to, this past summer, kind of work with the director of the missions organization to help just kind of keep people going on the trips and helping with organizational stuff and administrative stuff. And I think that I've just realized my passion for that and organizing things and making things work, but that my leadership skills have grown so much as a result of these trips, and that I'm not afraid to be more of a leader in my work and in my studies too. So that's been a huge impact for me.
When I think back to my trips, it's, you know, there's these little moments that you remember, and these really cool spaces that you end up in. But one of those spaces was just the opportunity to worship with Christians from a completely different culture. And it was just, it was nothing I was, you know, anticipating, but being there and even singing, you know, worship songs in a language that I didn't speak, but being there with other Christians, and it, there was just this connection with them. Even though they're, you know, all the way from across the world, even though we spoke different languages, although a lot of them spoke English as well. But it was just such a powerful experience for me to connect with these people and realize, wow, they're just people. They're just young people like me. You know, they're passionate for God like I am. They're in a different country, but I don't know, something about that changed me. I'm not sure I could put words to it, you know, right now, but I feel like those kinds of experiences, they can't help but shape a person.
That's interesting. I know when I was in Paraguay living with a non-Christian family, it was so interesting how my perspective going in was, okay, well, I need to, you know, my Spanish was like okay, and it got a lot better throughout the summer because they didn't, other than my host sister who had been an exchange student in Rhode Island, she, no one else spoke English in my family. So I got pretty decent at Spanish. But I remember just thinking to myself, okay, I need to find a way to communicate the gospel. I have to lay out, you know, whether I have to learn the Romans Road or something here has to happen. And how none of that really worked. I never seemed to make that connection, especially with my host mom, who was from Argentina. But at some point in the summer, she made the comment that, you know, what was it that was different about me? Even though I didn't have the language, I didn't have, and to just for me see how the power of the Holy Spirit is very real when you are in a dark place, and how I didn't have to be this amazing communicator or someone with all the right illustrations or all the right cultural analogies for God to work. You know, God just uses people who show up. And so I thought that was so so cool to be part of that. So as we finish up here, give some ideas for the people that are listening who may, I mean, there may be folks that are in college listening. There may be folks in their 30s who are listening who are like, you know, having pretty established careers and they're going to have to take off a chunk of time if they're going to do something. What are great ways to find out about opportunities out there, or ways to explore? You know, do you find out through friends or through your church or through, how do you, you know, what would you say as far as where young adults really can connect and plug in to find out about places that they can go, or opportunities that would be good fits for them?
Well, speaking from, I have a background working in college ministry, and as a college student, most colleges have several Christian ministries. And first of all, that's a great place to plug in for you personally, but also a lot of those ministries will take trips. Mm-hmm. They'll take, you know, local trips. Some of them will take overseas trips. And I know the group I worked with, we would take students pretty much every summer. We'd take students overseas. Hmm. And we had a really developed process that was well thought out. Mm-hmm. And so I would, you know, my suggestion for, say, college students would be start at the college, start with your groups there. Mm-hmm. And see kind of what's already established. Mm-hmm. And that's a good starting place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'd say that, like, for those who kind of have an idea of what they're passionate about, as far as, like, say, social justice causes go, you can look into organizations and nonprofits that are doing that kind of work. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them have exposure trips, will bring you along. So you can do the research on those and just kind of see if they have trips and if you can go with them. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think for me, I found out about a lot of things just by getting involved in a church that's really similar to the passions that I have in ministry and missions, and also being involved in like small groups where I've met a lot of people. And I think a lot of that was just God and me asking Him to provide people to be in my life who had things in common with me. So that's been huge. And I think that I have learned a lot just from connecting with people and talking about missions and ministry, people who are like-minded about different organizations that I didn't even know existed. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, that's good. I guess other ways would be to look at various mission boards that mm-hmm. focus on certain areas of the world, or if you know, if you've come out, you know, you're solid in your French or whatever, and you know you want to look at that. We have so many here in Colorado Springs, in fact, mm-hmm. that do send people and have summer trips and mm-hmm. short-term and stuff. There's a lot of opportunity out there. So,
yeah,
of course, definitely. You can also weigh in on our blog. If you've had an awesome experience, please do tell us about that. We always blog about the show, so we want to make sure we get your experiences in there as well. But in the meantime, thanks you guys so much for weighing in on this.
Thank you.
Thanks for having the conversation. Us.
South, my constant solid ground. You are my lantern in the night. When I'm twisted up and shaken, you're the one I put my faith in. Yeah, you're the reason I survive.
Well, hey, folks, we are here for this week's culture segment, and I am so excited to have, for the first time here on The Boundless Show, Kelly Minter on the phone with me. Hey, Kelly.
Hey, how's it going, Lisa?
It is going very well. For those of you who don't know, Kelly and Martha and I actually sat down for coffee sometime this summer. And we just like to say that because we like to name drop. You know, Martha and I just go out and we do coffee with people. And Kelly was one of them. And so at that time, or maybe it was a little bit before, we knew that she was just about to release Wherever the River Runs, How a Forgotten People Renewed My Hope in the Gospel. Kelly is a writer. She is a musician. She is a Bible teacher. She is, because she's not even going to say this, so I'm just going to say it. She is there, like, getting published with people like Beth Moore and Priscilla Shirer, y'all. Okay, let's just be honest. So she's got all kinds of people that love to hear her speak and love her teaching. You've done studies on what, like Nehemiah, I know you did one on. You did one on, like, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, too, right?
I just finished that, actually, and okay. That's coming out, I think, in November, I'm excited about that.
Soon to be released. And also the author of The Fitting Room, I know, because a group of us girls here at Focus on the Family did that as a devotional, as a group. So we're in your sphere, Kelly. We're in your sphere.
Hey, I'm happy. I feel like if you're in my sphere, then I've got to somehow be in yours. And so that feels good to me right now.
Well, that is good. So, and not to just make it sound like you're only about the ladies, because we have guys listening too. I want to say that this book we're going to talk about today is super applicable to anyone out there who just wants to understand a fresh way of seeing their faith. And Kelly's going to talk a little bit about how this happened for her through what started out as a single kind of haphazard trip to the Amazon jungle and has since become a regular ministry there, not only with her dad, but with other people. So I want to kick it off because folks just heard Kelly in our roundtable segment, a bunch of young adults talking about their experience with missions. You open up the book talking about how this trip came about and how you thought you were going to talk to a record label and talk about music and stuff like that. And the next thing you knew, you were going on this trip. What was your expectation going down the first time? I mean, what did you think you were going to do? Because I know you were kind of like, it wasn't even the best time in your life to be doing this. You were kind of like, what? Right. What's this about? So what mm-hmm. was that first trip to you? What were your expectations? And then what really did that become?
Well, I think there was a lot of unknown because you're heading to the Amazon jungle. We were getting on a wooden boat, a fairly primitive kind of wooden boat, mm-hmm. and stringing up hammocks that we were going to sleep in. And
yeah, I couldn't even deal with that story of that guy that just wedged himself in between you and that other girl. Like that.
My sister and I, we like hung our hammocks up, and then there was one of the Brazilians. They like to sleep really closely together, and by the time we got into our hammocks, there was another Brazilian just right in between us, just strung his hammock right there. And so I don't even know what expectations I had, except for that, hey, the president of my record company at the time, he was involved in this mission. He wanted to get some of his artists to see what was going on, and I was game. And what I had no idea, though, that it would become a significant part of my life's work. And I think that's probably the piece of surprise, that when we take trips like this, we just don't know what God's going to do, how he's going to use it in our lives.
Yeah. So describe kind of what the unexpected was that you encountered in your first couple of days. Because I think most people, I mean, you grew up as a believer. You probably knew that, you know, you've read all about Jim Elliot and other people that have gone as missionaries down there. So you probably had some idea of what, like, you know, whether it's the South Americans or you have this, you know, whatever tribe mentality. What did you see those first few days, and what were kind of some of the biggest memories that stand out?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think for one thing, you can know in your head all kinds of things, and you can even see it. We're inundated online with different parts of the world, but until you actually get to the place that you've read about or think you know about, and actually see it and encounter people with names and real stories, it's hard to really have that, to really know it in that way, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so I had several encounters over the first few trips that were just totally life-changing for me. And I would say probably one of the biggest ones was meeting some of the jungle pastors, mm-hmm. which it's just so funny to even say that. But there are all these jungle pastors, just like there are pastors here in the U.S. or wherever, that are ministering deep in the jungle, and that's their calling. And they're either people that grew up in the jungle or people from Manaus, which is the major city, and have felt called to go into the jungle. And so that very first trip, as we would hit different villages, we'd meet some of these jungle pastors. And the very first trip I was at, it was the river was flooding, and you can imagine the Amazon is already just so vastly enormous, and it was overflowing. And homes were being completely swallowed up by water. And there was one pastor that was just huddled up at the very top of his church. They kept planking, like they would keep putting planks and staying ahead of the water all the way to the point where the water had completely flooded the church. But he and his family were up in the attic. at the very, very top, up where the rafters were. And I asked him why he didn't leave. You know, why don't you leave this place for higher ground? And he said, there are lives here. My people are here. And so to see that kind of faith, to see people in those types of circumstances living out their faith, I think, I could tell you 100 stories like that, but those were the types of stories that really, really kind of ruffled my sort of comfortable Western concept of Christianity.
Yeah.
And what it was really looking like in other parts of the world.
Well, and I think one of the things you talk about in the book is how you realize that God truly cares for each one of us in unique ways, and how it just because people are living in the jungle doesn't mean that he cares for them less or he cares for the poor less. In fact, sometimes he has a special provision for them. Didn't you? You shared the story of a guy. What was it? Is it Jan or Yan?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just how you recognize
Jan.
Yeah. Okay. Just talk a little bit about just that experience of encountering him and how you realized, like, wow, God's care for him in a very unique situation.
Yeah. I met this little boy, and we were offered a prayer time at the end in the school setting. And this little 4-year-old boy named Jan, when we offered a time for prayer, he just leapt out of his chair and came running to the front, and then kind of went back and got his mom's hand and pulled her to the front, and knew that he needed prayer. And when I heard their story, it was they had been displaced and didn't have a house, and the father and mother had broken up, and he was living with his mom in the backside of this hut, and he knew at 4. We need help, and we need God, and so we prayed over him. We toured the house, helped them financially a bit, and kind of tried to stay up with their story. And I ended up praying over him right before we left, and just not knowing if I'd ever see him again. Hmm. And I think it was about 2 years later, I ended up coming across him in another village. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, there's Jan, you know. And I started talking to his mom, and she and her husband had gotten back together, and they'd had another child, and things were so stable. And she had even, the mother had given her life to Christ, and there was just some really great things going on. And it was about a year after that I got an email from one of the staff workers in Brazil saying that his mother, Jan's mother, had been struck by lightning and was killed right in front of him. Hmm. And I my whole body just kind of went cold, you know, because I thought, gosh, here I am in all my comforts and in all the luxuries here on the other side of the world, and here this storm had rolled through the Amazon and it killed his mother. And so I didn't know. Nobody could really find him. They had gotten the news quite late, and we just didn't know what the situation was. And it was a year ago that I was on the Amazon, and a few of us, we got into this ramshackle canoe, and we were able to find him, and he's living with his father and his grandparents, and there are some really amazing things going on in his life. And I thought, isn't it amazing that the Lord would so lead us and prompt us to pray for him, to pray over him, even before this tragedy? And I don't know. I mean, and the story is still being written, but just the privilege of being able to be written into people's lives, and to be able to keep up with these lives, and also to be, it's so sobering. Mm-hmm. It's just so sobering to hear how this is suffering that people have gone through, and to know that it's an invitation and a sacred calling that we could partake in their stories, and obviously bring the hope and the grace of Jesus. And I think that was the one piece. As I spoke to his father, I said, you know, I met your wife a few different times, and I was able to tell him that we prayed over her and prayed for provision, and, you know, here they'd gotten back together. And so just stories like that have just changed me over and over.
Well, one thing that's often said, now that you mentioned that, about cross-cultural experiences is, you know, and sometimes it seems kind of cliche, is, oh, you know, it's going to change you so much more than you're going to change the people there. And you do have a section of the book where you talk about returning to Nashville and just like looking at your house and kind of your ordered life and your how everything plays right. out here in the U.S. And it's actually John is the guy who started guiding you down the river. He's the one that initially, I think, invited you, right, on this trip, and he and his wife, Juliet, and how John, and he was a radio guy, right, an executive, label executive.
Record company executive, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So he kind of introduced you to this whole experience, got you going, and one of the things he said to you is he shared with you how God actually wrecked his retirement plans, these ideas of golf and all, you know, and he said, like, well, how many beaches can you lie on, really? And so this whole idea of how God had really shaped his vision of what he was going to do with his remaining years. And talk a little bit, Kelly, about going back, like you do in the book, where you returned to Nashville and kind of assessed your life. What were the takeaways that you had coming back from those experiences, you know, in Brazil on the Amazon with those jungle pastors? And then you have to translate that into the affluence and the order and everything else you take into a Western experience.
Mm-hmm. That's put so well. That translating it back is so difficult. I think for one thing, there's that we hear a lot about it where people go and they come back and then, you know, they feel guilty or it wasn't about that kind of heaviness of the guilt and all that. It was more okay, I don't know how to make sense of this. I have no idea why I was born on this side of the equator or in this particular country, or I don't know why I had the resources that I was given, but because of that, and as a believer, I now have such a responsibility, and I have actually been in Deuteronomy the last few weeks and just kind of reading through that book, and it's so interesting how the Lord goes back to Israel over and over, and he says, I want you to be generous and gracious to the fatherless and the widow and the orphan and the foreigner, and the reason he gives over and over and over is because, he said, because you were once a slave in Egypt, and I rescued you. I was gracious to you when you were a foreigner and you were suffering. And I think that to me is more what I came back with, even though it is a struggle. It's a daily struggle as to how do I spend my money, how do I spend my time when I am now very aware of how so much of the world is living. That is a daily struggle. But I think I also look at it as a privilege of the Lord has been gracious to me. The Lord has rescued me and has given me grace, whether it's grace for my sin and has gotten me out and has rescued me or just the blessings that he's given me in my life. And because of that, I now and we now have this privilege and this honor to reach out to the those on the fringes of society, whether it's overseas or right in our own communities. Mm-hmm. But I really discovered, even though it was so difficult to come back and try to make sense of it all, in that journey over the last several years, I've really realized, wow, this is the privilege. The privilege is to give and hopefully to sacrifice and to make our lives about those who need to be shown the grace of Jesus, just like we have been shown that grace. And sometimes that shows up in materialism and stuff, but honestly, I think that's one of the things, too, Lisa, that I realized that I was thinking, we will go bless these people because they are poor, and then these jungle pastors started talking to me about their faith and the experiences that they have with Christ and their intimacy of him. And I sat there and I thought, oh, the foolishness of this. I am the poor one. You know, they are rich, and I am poor, and so I had, there's so many different moments and epiphanies that you have. I think any time you step out and do what the Lord's asked you to do.
Yeah. And I think it is so interesting how two things that struck me when you were talking about that in the book is taking that back home to Nashville. And one, the conversation you had with the little boy, I think in your neighborhood or whatever, who said, why do you have yes. all these bedrooms when it's like just you
right.
here? And he was
right.
comparing yes. that to
yeah,
his family and how they were living. And then was it Mary Catherine who was talking about the family that she felt called to give a computer to? And then those very real wrestlings of what if this like continues? What if I can't just give them this thing and then be done with it? But what if they start needing me and it becomes more right. of like a relationship and more of a process? And I think that's yeah. so true of us. You know, I just think of my own selfishness of I want to do it in my time and my space and then retreat and have my little, you know, latte in mm-hmm. my hand and then go back in yeah. when I want to do it. And
exactly.
And it's so true. And yet you see that when you're in a culture where everything is shared, everything is given, there's not even a lot to begin with, there are so many other things to focus on.
Oh, totally. And really what you're hitting on is relationship. And I think for, yeah, my friends that we encountered this particular family in our own neighborhood that really just has a lot of need and a lot of kids in a very tight environment. And honestly, all of us, we just wanted to, like, okay, well, here's the computer. And, you know, or here's, you know, we could, here's some money for the taxi cab and the Lord was asking so much more, and he was asking for the inconvenience of relationship, really.
Mm-hmm.
And, 'cause relationship is inconvenient. And I can say that we're going on 3 years with this family, and we don't see them every day, but have had some really special encounters and have been asked to do some really specific things for this family that have really been a blessing, and it's been a blessing for us as well. And so I think that was probably one of the biggest takeaways too, is just realizing, wait, there's a mission field right here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have to go to the Amazon to meet the needs of people. And it can be poor people. It can also be very wealthy people that are just miserable apart from Christ. Or, I mean, it could be people in tough marriages. I mean, the Lord is just asking us to minister and give our lives away on a regular basis. And you're so right. It's like, I feel the same way. I want to just, okay, I did my thing, and then now I'm going to go back with my cup of coffee and mm-hmm. back to my comfortable space. And I'm challenging myself and asking the Lord to continue to give me opportunities to really invest in relationship. And
yeah.
I think that's what the Lord's calling all of us to.
Well, and that's why I think your, just another point, your chapter on the list and returning and finding that list of the 50 most influential Christian women and say, you know, in the seat of the car and saying, oh, okay, I'm not on it, and trying to realize, okay, what is true influence? And having seen
yeah.
the influence of all these people like nestled in the jungle, literally, who have no Twitter accounts, no publicity, no,
right.
you know, and to see really what a difference they're making and how that kind of shook you up in light of that. Pretty cool.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a whole world that exists outside of this whole system of how we deem influence and importance here in the United States. You know, we have these systems of, well, you have to have this many followers and this much publicity and this much acknowledgement, and you have to make this amount of money. And we have all these little markers, and there's a whole world of faith out there that they exist completely outside of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so healthy for me. That is so healthy for me every time I start getting bound up in how am I measuring up here? To get outside of all of that and go, no, the question is, am I very simply carrying out what the Lord has asked me to carry out? Am I fulfilling the purposes that He has called me to?
Yeah.
And am I living, you know, purely before Him? And I mean, that's just it's so much simpler, I think, than we sometimes make it in our society.
Yeah. Well, without giving away pieces of the end of the book, I do just want to allude to the fact that the book finishes with, quite frankly, a lot of loss. And a lot of, I think we could read through some of the stories of the people that you introduce us to throughout the book and say, oh my word, okay, so they were just sold out to the Lord, and God's going to bless that, and He's going to give them all this amazing ministry, and it's going to extend for decades and decades, and they're, you know, and yet God still God gives and God takes away, and there is loss there. How, Kelly, in looking, you know, looking and seeing that and how that impacted you, what is next for you? What do you see now as having seen and experienced these things? Where do you go from here? And then how can young adults who are listening, how can we see, like, see the need, understand, even if we can't get to the Amazon, what does that look like for us as far as what God may be calling us to with what we have?
Mm-hmm. Well, to answer the first part of that question, I think, yes, life is a vapor, you know, as we see in Scripture, whether we live to be 100 years old or less than that, it's fast. And so I think for me, and as a result of some of the loss that I have experienced and just seeing the urgency, I want my life to count. I want to leave a legacy. I want to live for what matters. I think, especially when I was more of a young adult, I like to think I'm still a young adult, but I think I'm not. I think I'm maybe out of that phase. But anyhow, especially when I was a younger
adult.
Let's
just say youngish. Youngish.
Okay, yeah. Youngish. Yeah. Yes, perfect. I was zealous for, you know, so many different things that were good things, but they were fleeting things. They were temporal things. And so I definitely, my passion is this work in the Amazon. I also, the Justice and Mercy International is the organization I work with, and they also have a big ministry in Moldova to orphans. And so I've just got back from there, and I love that too. And I want to disciple people in my own community. And so I guess I'm more passionate than ever about what I feel like the Lord's called me to. But for the young adult, I would say if you have the opportunity to get out of Western culture just for a short stint, just to see and to hold and to touch and to smell the differences, and if there's a way that you can use your resources to partner with any type of organization that is really empowering indigenous people, and especially if you can do it in the name of Jesus, I mean, I would say take that opportunity, expose yourself. If that's not something that is possible right now, that's not a problem at all, because we can get outside of ourselves in our own communities all the time, and there are countless opportunities. So whether it's through your church or some sort of a organization right in your own community to, you know, women who have just gotten out of prison. That's an organization we have here in Nashville. Or I'm going to a fundraiser tomorrow for something to do with those who are sex trafficked right here in the state that I live in. And so just to get involved in some sort of service, some sort of outreach, to push yourself outside of yourself, that I would say I could not recommend that enough. And honestly, it's not even my recommendation. It's really, I think, what the Lord's called us to, to always be about those on the fringes of society, whether it's the poor or the marginalized or the sick. And so, yeah, I would say, take those opportunities if you have them, and pray through and see if it's what the Lord is asking you to do. And jump in with both feet, because I think as much as we can get outside of ourselves, I think that's where the blessing comes, that's where the joy comes, that's where our faith is enriched.
Yeah.
So that would be my thinking.
Yeah. So it's like for you, you know, for this book, it was wherever the river runs. For some people, it may be wherever the interstate runs or the sidewalk runs or just wherever you are, wherever God has placed you. That's awesome. So
exactly.
Well,
exactly.
Kelly, thank you so much for sharing of your story, not only in print, but here on the show. And again, folks, the book is Wherever the River Runs. I'm talking to Kelly Minter, and check out the book. Of course, we'll link to it on the blog and hopefully get your feedback on it as you read it, and you share your own experiences with us of where God has brought you, whether just outside your door or somewhere across the world. So thanks again, Kelly.
Hey, thank you so much. I love being with you today.
And they are inside your head. You got a voice that says you won't get past this one. You won't win your freedom. It's like a constant war, and you want to settle that score, but you're bruised and beaten, and you feel defeated.
Well, as always, we wrap up our show with our inbox, and we love it when our counseling department is down here to help us answer listener questions. These are your questions, and I have Roberta here today. Hey, Roberta.
Hi, Lisa. Great Hi, audience. You. Thank you.
All right. Well, I'm going to read kind of a serious one here today from one of our listeners, and Roberta's going to answer this for us. She says, I've been in love with this man for the last 5 years. We were very young when we fell in love, but the relationship grew tougher with time. We had a lot of fights, and sometimes he lost his temper and hit me or slapped me on some occasions. And things have been difficult since then. I'm not able to decide if I should stay with him anymore or not. He is sorry and he wants to change. He says he really loves me and I have forgiven him for the past mistakes, but I'm not able to decide if I should give him another chance or not.
That's a great question, Lisa. To begin with, in relationships, the element of safety is probably one of the most primary aspects of a relationship for the health of the relationship and also the success of it. And already it sounds in this situation that the feelings of unsafety are there and volatility. Oftentimes, an abuser themselves have been a victim of abuse growing up. And not all the times, but primarily, yes. And so it sounds like her boyfriend probably suffered from abuse and or witnessed it. And those patterns of behaviors can be so deeply ingrained and very difficult to break. And then you take those behaviors into a new relationship, and the cycle of abuse then can begin. And what that looks like is, over time, it's not always right away, the physical aspect, but over time, it could start with the emotional abuse, chipping away at your significant other's self-worth. And then it can cross that line into physical abuse. And with that being said, oftentimes the abuser is sorry and will come back and apologize for that and proclaim their love for that person. And the victim in that moment has a lot of choices to make. You know, is he sorry? Should I forgive him? Can we work through this? And oftentimes they do, and they forgive and they try to go back in the relationship and work through it. There's always that honeymoon stage until those deeply ingrained patterns begin to appear again. And then you, over time, with the effects of abuse, this particular female being in it over a time span of about 5 years, those effects of abuse are very traumatic and on many levels, psychological, mental, of course, physical, if that's there, and spiritually. And it gets harder when our self-esteem gets chipped away, our feelings are traumatized, and even you may even sense some numbness. It gets harder to leave. And especially when that person keeps pleading with you, but I love you, I'm going to change. To answer the question, though, to change is so important to have not just the I'm sorry and forgiveness component, but the repentance component. And what that looks like is that the abuser's complete focus and attention on that personal growth that's needed to break those deeply ingrained behaviors. And that, for the most part, is very difficult to do in a relationship. That person needs to have the space and time to solely focus on their recovery, to change those behaviors. And in my opinion, a good year of intensive counseling outside of the relationship to not only learn about those behavioral patterns, but have enough time to actually implement the change, have the fruit of the repentance show that he can manage life without resorting to violence. Also for her to take that time out and get in counseling for any trauma that she suffered. But this has to take place outside of the relationship. And when it comes to love, there's the feeling of love, and then there's the action of love. And to truly be at that point of acting on the love is to say, you know what? We love each other enough to let this destructive cycle go. We need this intense space so I, as the abuser, can really focus in counseling, because I don't want to keep this pattern up. And for her to get the healing and surround herself with accountability and individuals that she can fellowship with to be careful that she doesn't slip back into the pattern.
Well, great thoughts, Roberta, and thanks for weighing in on that. Those are good points. Okay, folks, that is it for this week's show. As always, we want to hear from you. Write to us at editor@boundless.org, and we will address your question in the future. Thanks again to those of you who are so vulnerable as to write these questions and bring them to us to answer, because know that you're not alone. Probably other people mm-hmm. are thinking these same things. And I know I've alluded to this on the show. I feel in the past I was in at least an emotionally abusive relationship. And so you can think that you're all like Christian and in the church and all this kind of stuff. We're all vulnerable and we all need that accountability and that wisdom. So that is it. All right. Thanks, everyone. We will see you around next week. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.